Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to today's podcast. In today's segment, and we will be talking with Mr. Tom McNera. He's a data protection officer and the owner of a top cybersecurity company known as Apex Privacy, based in Dublin, Ireland. This is our first true international podcast, so Tom, we give you the honor for doing this. Thank you so much for your time.
No problem, Ravi. Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much. We looked up your bio, did a little bit of snooping on you on Google. We didn't do like a background check or anything, nothing like that. But we looked up your LinkedIn profile, and you seem to have a great background in cybersecurity data protection. Can you just kind of tell us any highlights of your career and like what got you motivated to go into data privacy?
Yeah, I guess I had the long way around to go about it was I graduated here in Ireland, undergraduate in law, and that was during the time when the financial markets were just showing signs of crashing and there was a lot of uncertainty. So I think I got the last loan ever granted out of Ireland, and I packed my bags and went off to Australia, where I studied international law at master's level, because it's just there was an area that really grabbed my attention. And at the time, I took quite a few modules around the human rights and the implications on an international level. And unbeknownst to me, that years down the line, I'd be able to fall back on that understanding of human rights and particularly digital rights, such as digital privacy and the likes of that, when I went to set up my own company, Apex. But I suppose on the way today, I had some up and downs. I worked in London in financial markets in compliance, so I never went really down the pure law route. I was more hands-on with business, guiding them through new regulation, new laws, how to comply with them. So I was lucky enough to work with some large global financial institutions such as JP Morgan, Citibank, just to name a few. And what was really interesting there was dealing with companies who had operations in multiple jurisdictions, multiple continents across the world. And it really opened my eyes to how different countries have different approaches, even different interpretations of the same type of laws. So I think in terms of highlights, definitely would be rolling out the FATCA compliance program with JP Morgan from Dublin, and that was quite a large global project. But also it gave me the experience and the confidence when tackling GDPR compliance issues for international clients, how to have a company with a very strong compliance program, flexible enough to make money and also achieve all their economic targets, but at the same time being conscious about the different laws and regulations that apply to them, especially when it comes to privacy and data privacy in particular. So it's one of my passions that I'm able to really dig into the subject on a philosophical basis, but then at the same time work with companies in order so that they can really live the letter of the law and do their best by their customers and their clients.
Excellent. Sounds awesome. Now, how did Apex Privacy come about? Is this a company that you, I'm assuming being a founder, that you've started? Are you the owner or do you have other partners in the business?
Yeah, it started just as myself. And I think at the time there's really a gap in the market for bringing compliance departments to companies that before, just say, so definitely the GDPR was the catalyst. I had some experience in data privacy, data protection. We worked with some large institutions here in Ireland. Many years ago, it seems now, getting ready for the GDPR, and it really was an ability to understand exactly what operationally is required by the law. And then when it came time for me to make my next move, I did see that gap in the market that companies, especially tech-type companies, which never had to really consider a compliance, an operational compliance manager or even program, which the GDPR does mandate, this was lacking from the market. So I was able to use nearly a decade in compliance and a really thorough understanding of the law of the GDPR and digital privacy to be able to fill that need in the market. So Apex started off as a one-man band, the sole consultant. At the moment, we have 5 staff, so we're growing. We're growing year on year, which is good, I guess.
Yeah, it sounds like me. I'm kind of a one-man band. I'm trying to expand my own little company too. So little baby steps, right? So anyway.
That's it. You have to start somewhere, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so how long have you been in business? And is your presence just in Ireland, or do you have presence in other EU countries or globally for that matter?
We're in business just near on 2 years now. So the GDPR came into effect in May of 2018, and we launched in February of 2018. So next month it'll be 2 years in operation. We're mainly based here in Dublin, but we do have international clients because, as I said, tech companies with goals and aspirations to be the next big thing, they can't afford to leave Europe as a market. And obviously, as the home of the GDPR, probably the strongest piece of data privacy regulation in the world, they need to comply with that. So we do have client base across the US, Australia, obviously Europe, and even we have 1 or 2 clients in Switzerland where they're very cautious around their data also.
Okay, now I was going to ask you, here in the United States, and I'm not afraid to say because I kind of like to say it the way it is, but I say it politely, here in America, our cybersecurity threat landscape is very, it's there. And, I think we, here in the U.S., we are an ignorant society when it comes to security and cybersecurity. We are very, very reactive. We don't really act until something bad happens. Kind of like what happened on 9/11, when those planes hit the World Trade Center. It's mm-hmm. a heartbreaking incident for sure, but, we didn't really jump on the security scene until that happened. And unfortunately, I just don't think we've really learned our lessons yet because, we haven't really been hit by a large-scale attack yet. So that's just the society that we have here in America. What is the mindset like in Ireland for cybersecurity? Is it proactive, reactive, or how do you find it there?
Yes, so in Ireland and I think across Europe, there's still certain companies and even large companies are slow to get on board. The drivers are probably similar to the States, so there's risk to reputation and there's risk to the cash flow, I guess, associated with the bad publicity of cyber threats. We haven't seen, likewise, we haven't seen serious breaches being able to cripple companies, but there is always that threat in the landscape. Purely from a GDPR point of view and a compliance point of view, I'd say that companies, depending on their risk appetite, can't afford to overlook cybersecurity because you can do everything that you can internally to ensure that data is treated properly, et cetera, et cetera. But without really trying to fortify the business and have those controls in place, there will be weaknesses. And I think we've definitely seen the shift over here in terms of public perception. Data breaches get front pages on newspapers, and there's really a raising of an awareness here that companies are expected to be stewards of the data that they're holding, and it is hurting reputations and it is hurting the bottom line. So I think ideally you'd want everybody to stand up and take notice and be doing it for the right reasons, but ultimately I think the main catalyst is still at the moment protecting reputations, which isn't a bad thing. The best companies want to have the best track record and are therefore investing in cybersecurity. But I think we have a long way to go just yet, just like our friends over there in the States.
Yeah. Okay. I'm glad you kind of gave that insight because, you know, I've never really been to Europe. I've actually flown through there on my way to India. You know, I've been through like Heathrow and, you know, and Charles de Gaulle Airport in France. And I was actually, you know, at the time, I think I was actually pretty impressed with the security at Heathrow. They seem to take, you know, at least their physical and access entry, you know, at the airport pretty seriously. I know that England, you know, London, they're really tight with the CCTV cameras and all that. So I think you guys are probably...
Yeah, definitely in physical security in terms of, yeah, major international airports. We, especially coming from France and the UK and some of the things that have happened there over the years, it definitely, it would be a strong point.
Now, just another question kind of segue off here. Are biometrics being used quite a bit in Ireland? Do you make use of, like, surveillance cameras, CCTV cameras, facial recognition? Because I know in London they use those quite heavily. I mean, here in America, they're used, but there's just so much controversy around them. What's the perception of like that in Dublin, and is it widely used? Or
in terms of public security cameras or public CCTV, we don't see too much of them. Obviously, nearly all premises and, as you guessed, the bars and clubs where we'd have a lot of traffic on the weekends or probably even during the week would all monitor kind of their shop front. But in terms of a public and a surveillance type of nationalized one, we haven't really seen it. On the biometric side of things, I think there was a craze there a couple of years ago that everybody was signing in with thumbprints. I know from the gym that I go to and different cars and obviously your phones and that are all triggered by biometrics. And I've seen quite a lot of companies kind of scale that back in terms of staff logins. And it's purely coming from the regulation kind of cracking down on that risk of biometric data. But in terms of surveillance, yeah, the UK would traditionally have that very integrated system of CCTV, less so in other parts of Europe and in Ireland. It's mainly in the private sphere.
Okay. Well, awesome. Okay. Now, kind of back to your company, who is your typical customer? Is it the SMBs in Ireland, the bigger scale multinational companies? Who do you try to target?
Yes. So in terms of... So a little bit on the GDPR again, and I know I keep going back to the GDPR, and I think at the start we were described as a cybersecurity company, but we'd be definitely more of a data privacy consulting firm. So in terms of the GDPR, it's the General Data Protection Regulation, and that one piece of regulation needs to cover every business and every organization from the public to the private sector. So potentially, it's nearly all clients, but obviously a business can't be grown with that in mind. We really look at tech companies on an international stage because, as you know, tech companies can work, can have a product and distribute it globally through the App Store, through the Android Store, and the likes of that, and all their data circles back to servers maybe in the US or wherever they have it. So on an international stage, we're looking at startups in the tech space who are probably even in their infancy gathering large amount of data. Within Europe, we have clients in the med tech sector. So, apologies. Sorry about that. Someone caught my throat. Where was I? Yeah, within Ireland and within Europe, there's certain companies that are mandated to have a data protection officer, and that's where we come in. We help companies, especially again in the infancy. We would help them meet all their obligations and give them a platform for growth. But we have worked with larger companies as a support piece for their data protection because, as you know, this is... I know there's been laws around for a long time, but it is quite a new area and there is still a lot of learning both on the operations side as well as awaiting decisions in courts and the likes of that. So I suppose, yeah, to get back to your question of who's our main kind of customer, we're looking at really startups with big aims, and we also look at more established companies who trigger those requirements to have data privacy professionals, especially if they're working with medical type of data or if they're working with any sort of sensitive data.
Okay. Sounds good. Now, and back to your product and service plan, it looks like, you know, you're so, you know, focused on the compliance issue, it seems like you're more into GDPR, CCPA, and the data protection officer as, or chief privacy officer as a service. Now, I've heard of, like, you know, virtual CISOs, virtual CIOs as a service, but I've never heard of the chief privacy officer as a service. That's interesting. Could you elaborate more on your services, especially the CPO thing that you have?
Yeah, so we do, as I said, the company was born due to the GDPR, really, and compliance with that. What we've seen, the GDPR really is the benchmark when it comes to data privacy, and the principles are quite universal, so transparency, which requires companies to actually let individuals and users know how they are actually using their data, an element of fairness in terms of making sure that the individual has rights when it comes to being able to interact with the company and having control over their data. So the GDPR has set the bar quite high. It could probably go higher, but for compared to what came before it, it is a pretty strong piece of regulation. And our real focus on that, even with international clients, is once you comply with the GDPR, then complying with the CCPA or complying with different privacy regulations across the globe will usually be a much lighter touch once you've made that effort to comply with the GDPR. So that's why that takes such prominence within our service offering. And then what we've seen, what was born out of requests and necessity, was a data protection officer or a chief privacy officer as a service. So like your virtual CISO, we usually operate remotely unless we're required to be on site for some reason. And what we do is we bring that level of expertise in terms of compliance with different data protection and privacy regulations. We bring that into a company without having to up the headcount. We can do that on a subscription type basis. And what it does is it allows us to create a program and oversee it over a long time. And instead of doing your compliance projects, which may be a big project spent doing a lot of groundwork, but then you end up with these policies and protocols that kind of get forgotten about and left behind. So as part of our data protection officer as a service, we ensure that we stay connected with the internal teams and we keep moving initiatives to ensure that compliance is done to the best that you can. So there's this kind of saying going around that nobody's ever 100% compliant when it comes to data protection or privacy, and it's similar to cybersecurity in that there'll always be risks there, and you need an evolving and a growing program to be able to identify risks. So there's synergies there between cybersecurity and data protection compliance. But essentially, that data protection officer as a service just gives clients the assurance that there's experts involved that is going to give them a base to be able to grow their companies, knowing that what they've done to date and how they process data is done in a compliant manner. And we see that especially if clients are going for funding, it's becoming an ever more important aspect of investors' questions in terms of how to deal with these risks, how they protect the data and ultimately the reputation of the company. So I hope that answers your question. I know it can get into a bit of a rabbit hole when you start talking about all the functions of the data protection officer.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, it's the first time I've heard of this, because here in America, we have everything, virtual, virtual this, virtual that. But in terms of an actual, cybersecurity job title, the big one is the, the virtual CISO or the virtual CIO. This is the first time I've heard of a chief privacy officer as a service. So I'm sure that we offer that companies offer that service here. I just have never heard of it. So I think it might be a new thing that could be happening here in the U.S. So,
yeah, I think the actual role of the chief privacy officer is probably it's probably not as popular or hasn't been taken up by so many companies just yet. But I think given the evolving regulatory landscape, that this officer will become a lot more important in businesses going forward.
Yeah, because see, here in the United States, I mean, we had this thing called the Constitution, and a lot of people, they claim violations of privacy rights, constitutional liberties, because of what's been written in the Constitution, 300 years ago. So we have that security blanket, and that's why, that's why I kind of asked about biometrics, because here in America, I mean, the uptake on biometric technology by the public has been very, very slow, just because we are counted as citizens in the eyes of our government, and we have legal recourse that we can take, and because we're afforded that by our Constitution. But now, like, if you go to, these poor countries in Africa, where, there's no laws, there's no way of even recognizing them, but biometrics is giving them that means to be counted, as an individual citizen, if they're, their entitlements and their benefits. And so there's a stark contrast. And so that's why I think in America, maybe the chief privacy officer may pick up or may just have another slow uptake just because of all these issues that we have, with civil liberties and privacy rights and blah, blah, blah. Because as you know, here in the U.S., we have the American Civil Liberties Union. We have a lot of big, data privacy, groups that are lobbyists in D.C. And there's a huge political aspect that goes with it too, along with the cybersecurity realm of it as well. So it's very interesting to see how all this intertwines together, both the cybersecurity aspect and the social implications of it. So this kind of brings up another topic, Tom. Cybersecurity is not just all about hacking, digital assets and phishing and, attacking critical infrastructure. There's a big socio, economic aspect as well, especially when it comes to, the privacy and data privacy. And I think that's going to be a big thing that's going to be, occurring here in the next couple of years. So I think your company's probably very well, aligned, situated for the coming years, for the demand as that comes, So.
Yeah, let's hope so.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, it's just But anyway, so now here in the United States, we do have maybe one or two major laws with regards to data privacy, as far as I've kept up. I know that California has been the big pioneer for trying to get these acts or laws enacted. The first one was something about the Internet of Things. I think they tried to pass something with that, with regards to privacy and security with that. And then the second thing that came out, I think, in January, was this thing called the CCPA. And, in fact, it's quite interesting that we bring this up, because I've got another premium podcast coming up in mid-February. I'll be interviewing another guest of mine. I've had him on before. Plus, we'll be interviewing an attorney who is working on the legal aspects of CCPA as well. I think he's an attorney in Utah or California. So enough of my blabbering there, but can you describe the differences and similarities between the GDPR and the CCPA? I mean, are they kind of the same thing? Do they complement each other? Are they different? And are the penalties just as severe as the GDPR? And in fact, if you could, can you enlighten us into the penalties of the GDPR as well, too? Because I know they're pretty stiff, aren't they? I mean, like 4% of revenue or something, I think, if I'm correct.
Yeah, so the GDPR was given teeth, and I think that's the phrase. So as companies, large companies, and I think that there may have been eyes cast towards some of the social media giants, The penalties under the GDPR can range from 4% of global annual turnover or 20 million, depending which is higher. And the real reason is to be able to kind of hurt the bottom line in terms of a penalty. You know, we've seen with other regulated entities, especially in the financial space, that they can just eat up these fines and continue to be in non-compliance and see it as a tax to be paid for certain operations, whereas the GDPR and the individuals involved in writing that piece of law really wanted to ensure that there was enough force behind it that companies would really take it seriously. The CCPA also, they put more emphasis on individuals as well, so there can be fines issued depending, and the sums are calculated depending on the amount of individuals affected by a data breach. So I think there's a cap of $1,500. I'll have to recheck that, but it's very much broken down on an individual basis. So if you have a database of a million individuals, then you could imagine how significant if you were fined per individual under the CCPA.
Oh my God.
I think I alluded to earlier in the conversation that the GDPR really is the benchmark, and a lot of pieces from the GDPR have been reflected in the CCPA in protection of Californians' rights. But I suppose the underlying principles really stand there. So they want to ensure that individuals understand what a company's doing, and this is wrapped up under the idea of transparency. They also want to give rights to the individuals, and I know specifically under the CCPA there is a right to object to your data being sold, and companies that are selling data need to make it quite prominent on their website, the ability to opt out of that option. Then we've like traditionally had spam rights and the likes of that, and your right to unsubscribe from mailing lists. But yeah, in general, the GDPR being the benchmark, the CCPA has come in and it has looked to just strengthen the rights of Californians. And I think, as you said, there's different states within the US kind of approaching it in a piecemeal kind of manner. And we saw that in Europe back in 1998 when a directive around privacy was issued. And the difference between the directive and the regulation, which is the GDPR, the directive came out of Brussels and it requires all countries to apply this law, but it gives them a loose margin of interpretation in terms of how they're going to apply the directive, whereas that wasn't working. So that was in place for 20 years, and we ended up with the different states within Europe having lots of different interpretations of the law, and some of them are quite strict and some of them are quite lenient, and that was seen to be flawed. So then we came up with a regulation, and so there's zero interpretation in terms of a regulation coming out of Brussels. And this means that the GDPR, as it was written, applies to all the member states within Europe. And perhaps the US will end up with something like that, because I imagine for, just say, your typical companies having to apply different laws for each state within the US that they operate will at some stage come to a head and it won't be operationally feasible. So there may be efforts to go towards a national law as opposed to having each state set the boundaries, I guess. So yeah, that's kind of where I see with that. In terms of compliance, again, the CCPA was only passed this month. There's no doubt going to be decisions and court cases and a lot of interpretation still happening, because the GDPR has nearly been in effect for 2 years and we're still seeing that, and we can still see people kind of hesitant to make any decisions until different articles have been passed through the courts. Sorry about the kind of the in-depth view of European the European legal system, but that is a big differentiation between the directive and the regulation.
No problem. I really appreciate the detail. Now, just another question I have, maybe just my own ignorance, but is the GDPR just a European Union law, or does it? No, okay. Suppose, for example, like my company, am I liable to GDPR because I don't have any business operations in Europe? Now, I may have a client, one or two, that I do writing for in Europe, but I don't really hold their data or anything. But now, would someone like me be still be responsible for being compliant for GDPR, or does it, or is it just for your EU companies in Europe? So my question is, where does it go international, and where is it just exclusive for the EU nations?
Yes, so the idea, it is an extraterritorial law, and it applies to companies, for example, companies based in the States, but have the data of individuals within Europe, then you're bound by the GDPR, and you need to comply with that. Obviously, there's different levels to it, depending on the amount of data which you are processing, but by the letter of the law, once you have the data of one European individual, then the GDPR may apply to your business.
Oh, wow. Okay. Wow, so that's strict. Okay, well, I didn't realize that. No.
The CCPA operates in a similar way, so they have the definition of what a Californian resident is, so that also has the ability to regulate companies which aren't actually physically present within California.
Wow. Okay. What kind of consulting service do you have? So suppose my business grows and I have some clients in Europe and I'm holding their data in my database. What kind of services can I say, hey, Tom, I really need you now. Can you help me out here? How can you help me come in compliance? How do you help your customers? Suppose I'm your new potential customer. How can you help me come into compliance with the GDPR and CCPA?
Yes, so we have an established formula for how we guide clients through this. And what we really do at the very outset is through workshops with management, and whether that's the CEO or if it's a more established company, we'll have different team managers. And it's really a brainstorming session to understand what data resides within the company. So we ask all the questions of where the data is coming from. So are you collecting it directly from the individual? Is it being collected through third-party apps? Are you buying the data, if that's what you're into? So we really understand the business and what data sits within the company, but also we're concerned on how that data is acquired. So the GDPR governs how you actually go about collecting data, and it goes beyond just securing the data within your stewardship. So usually those sessions, and it might sound easy at the moment, oh, what data are you collecting? But when you have a company, and especially startups who've decided to grow fast and they're perhaps trying and testing and lots of different mechanisms might be used to either capture data or to leverage data. We really want to lay it all out there to understand exactly what's coming into the business, within the business, how it's being used, where it's being stored, and obviously if there's any third parties or outside parties who that's being shared with. So our first step with any client is to really map out all the data within the company, who it's coming from, how it's being gathered, where it's being stored, and who it's being shared with. From there, once we're comfortable in the knowledge of what exactly we're dealing with, we're able to work within the regulations. So we look at the CCPA, or we look at the GDPR, and we perform a gap assessment, which essentially is an article-by-article review of the law. And we understand if the company is bound by a certain article, and from there, what steps need to be taken to achieve compliance with any particular section of the law. And from there, once we've got all that put together, we put together a report. So this is your GDPR assessment or your CCPA assessment. And this report really provides the blueprint for any compliance program. So that's usually done as a standalone project. And from there, we'd either transition into the role of the data protection officer, or we do assist with change implementation projects where we oversee any required changes to the business to ensure that their data processing is done in a compliant manner. So that's the real kind of broken down version of what we actually do when we help companies get to compliance with any of these regulations.
Wow. Okay. Now, we know, the CISO and the CIO, they've got their own set of challenges today. You know, it's pretty well versed. I mean, their heads are on the line if, any attack occurs. Now, as a chief privacy officer and, the data privacy officer, are they on the same lines of responsibility as the CIO and the CISO? Or what are the challenges they face? Are they the same as the other C-levels, or are they different? Can you kind of explain more of that, please?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of overlap between the DPO, or the Chief Privacy Officer, and the CISO. So, in general, when you break it down, the CISO needs to ensure the integrity of the company's network systems and obviously data, whereas the Privacy Officer needs to also consider, how was the data captured? Was that done in a manner which complies with the laws and the principles of fairness and transparency? So there's so much overlap in terms of what the protection of the data once it's inside the company, and then the privacy officer needs to consider other aspects. Within the GDPR and within the CCPA, it's quite loose on the information security requirements, and basically both say that the security should be sufficient to the level of risk that the data is posed to the data. So it leaves it quite open. Basically, if you're a smaller company, you're expected to have certain levels, or if a larger company, there's a greater responsibility on you, and that's why they are such open clauses. In terms of the challenges faced, I think, again, I work closely with CISOs in our respective companies, and there's so much overlap. So obviously, and I think it's the number one, please correct me if I'm wrong, but just getting the buy-in from both the board level and the general staff, that's really the main problem and the main challenge, is ensuring that everybody's on the same page and that this isn't done as a matter of formality, that we're able to communicate to staff that it carries real importance. So our thoughts are usually aligned around those issues. Then you get into the more technical side of things. Okay, change management, if there is a change to a procedure that's been established for a long time, again, having the right tools in place to be able to train staff and retrain them on certain aspects of the role. And again, I think the CISOs that I know face a lot of the same types of challenges.
Wow. Okay, I didn't realize that it was in depth for the Chief Privacy Officer. So now,
yeah, what would you see from the CISO point of view? Would that be kind of in line with what your thoughts would be?
It's similar, and I think, Tom, I think what the problem here in America is, have you ever been to the U.S. before?
I have, not in a professional capacity. I spent a summer there as a student. We get a J-1 visa out of Dublin, or out of Ireland, that allows you to go and work for a summer in the U.S. So I was in New York.
Oh, okay. Well, see, here in America, our problem is that the CISO and the CIO, there's a huge disconnect between the proverbial C-suite and the employees, okay? The C-suite, you know, there's image of them always out golfing, you know, and enjoying, you know, going on what have you. But there is a fundamental lack of understanding and communications between the C-suite and the employees and employees to the C-suite. So it's kind of like a top-down and a bottom-up failure of communications on both sides, because the C-suite, I just, in my opinion, I just don't think they really still fundamentally understand the real gravity of the situation of the cybersecurity threat landscape here. I mean, first of all, they don't really understand really what the cyber threat reality is much. I mean, they don't, I mean, if they can't understand this, then I don't think they can even understand what data privacy means. I mean, seriously. I mean, every day in the news headlines, believe me, I mean, I'm tweeting at news headlines, you know, almost every day in the evenings, and there's every day there's a data breach of this. I mean, it's just become like a, you know, an expected news that, you know, there's going to be a data breach somewhere, you know, and if it doesn't happen, they're like, oh my God, what's going on here? You know, and it's just that the C-suite, they just don't seem to really care. And I don't think that they really, like, fundamentally don't care. It's just that they just think that they're going to become a victim. And that's, unfortunately, the mentality that we have here in America is that people think, well, if it hasn't happened to me, it's not going to happen. Well, it's going to happen. Everybody's at risk, right? I mean, until it really hits us and hits a company, especially a big Fortune 500 company, only then will the C-suite understand. Suppose company XYZ, suppose they're a Fortune 100 company, and until they get hit, they're not going to understand anything. Unfortunately, it's going to be way too late, right? I mean, they're going to have big downtime to recover. They're going to lose customers. They're going to have indirect costs and all that. You know, it's just, you know, and even then, after these big companies have been hit, we just don't seem to get it yet. I mean, we've seen, like, the British Airways hack. Remember the website hack? We've seen the Equifax hack. There was one with the Marriott Hotel Group. Facebook's like out every day with something, some controversy going on with Zuckerberg. But, you know, we just still don't seem to quite get it yet. And I really don't know what it's going to take for people to, you know, especially the C-level, the CIO or the CISO to really get it. Now, I think that, you know, if you talk to the CIO, CISO of a SMB, I think they have a much better grasp of what's going on. Okay. Because there's a lot more at stake. You know, their financial coffers are not as typically aligned as a Fortune 100 company. But I think it's just in that Fortune 100, 200, you know, 300 area where they just don't seem to get it because they just don't care. They say, okay, if we have to pay money, we'll pay money. You know, that's just the way it is here. And I don't know what it's going to take to, you know, have that change in mindset, you know. It's just people think, well, if it hasn't happened to me, it's never going to happen. But it just comes down to this one proposition, Tom. It's just everybody is fundamentally at risk. And nobody, anybody, anything can be a victim, right? But the only thing you can do is, if you do become a victim, is how you can be proactive to come back to a normal sense of operations, right? That's all you can do. In fact, even the C-suite, they just don't even have that mindset. Even if they do get hit, they don't know what to do. I mean, seriously, they may have a DR plan, a security policy, incident response, but, I mean, do they really know how to bring a business back up? Probably not. So, and, you know, I hate to be such a naysayer about America and the C-suite, but that's the way it is, you know. I mean, it's just, we just live in such a reactive society, so. But anyway. So, what, you know, we did talk about some of the fines and some of the rulings. Now, have you actually dealt with a client that has actually been, like, heavily penalized or anything? Or it's in the process of being penalized? Are you allowed to share any stories on that? Or?
Yeah, so particularly with the Irish regulator, they're quite pro. It's been seen as more of a force for good as opposed to a machine to fine businesses, because again, if they don't have the clout to go after the Facebooks and the larger companies, then fining and really going after SMEs won't win them any fans nationally either. We've seen some regulators, particularly in Germany, they're quite, and Germany and Spain, I think, are quite active on the fining space in terms of your smaller clients. In Ireland, we've dealt with the DPC, which is the Data Protection Commissioner, and her office. And it, at the start, like the start of any of those, any time that we've dealt with them, you're given time, you're given an order to change the way you do something and then come back to them. So anything we've dealt with is quite minor at the moment, but we've found that the regulator is very, very cooperative and very much out there to promote and to raise awareness kind of across the board, as opposed to frightening with the fines. Now, that's not to say that this year, once we hit 2020 and 2 years in place, that they won't become a bit more frequent. And yeah, we have clients across Europe, and yes, specifically Spain and Germany seem to be a bit heavier on the fine side of things. And then you see some of the, as you alluded to, some of the high profile breaches and the high profile decisions. I still, so far, I think the largest fine has been 50 million for Google.
Ooh.
And that was to do with transparency, and it was issued by the French regulator. That was with privacy policies, and I'm sure you're aware of how daunting, if you actually took the time to try and read Google or Gmail's privacy policy, we could be still here next week. So there was a decision stating that the way that their policies were laid out, and it was not done in a user-friendly manner. It wasn't transparent on the level of data that the individual was disclosing when they were signing up to a Google service. So that was the main one. But again, 50 million sounds quite big, but when you look at it overall against Google's earnings, it's not even a drop in the ocean.
Wow. Wow, to me, 50 million is a lot of money.
No, to me too, and to most people, yeah, but the behemoths that are Google and some of these large companies, it's not really enough at the moment. And again, there is 4% of the global annual turnover. That can start to hurt, and if it's done on a repetitive basis, that can really hurt. And I think, as you were stating beforehand, that the catalyst for a change, especially in more established companies, is usually the risk of fines and the risk to their bottom line. So when I'm working with SMEs and you've got managers and you've got owners which really want to do the right thing, it's usually it's a battle to try and get the resources to be able to affect what they'd like to do. But when you're large companies, so I know Facebook also had hundreds and thousands of accounts just in plain text along with passwords, and you're thinking that these are some very basic controls that just aren't being met, and you're trying to think, okay, where are their priorities lying when it comes to just protecting the data within their stewardship.
Okay, wow. Now, here in the U.S., I think GDPR is now really making, as you say, quote-unquote noise. I think there was some lag time when it first came out to what's now happening here. You know, for example, I've seen a lot of websites now saying that, you checkmark this box to make sure that, your data is safe with the GDPR and so forth. So that's one way I see it. Now, how is it like in the EU and in Ireland? I'm sure when the GDPR was first passed, it received a lot of attention, a lot of noise. How is it there now?
Yes, so at the start, I think there was a bit of an echo chamber there as well. So a lot of the initial, news was coming out of media outlets, which were one of the industries that were very heavily affected and impacted by the GDPR. Even there's still certain news sites from the US that are closed to Europe because there's such uncertainty on how to use cookies and how they're tracking people's data and how users move around their sites. So there was a lot of noise, especially on cookie banners and the likes of that at the time. Same thing over here. There was money in it as well. You know, people, there was lawyers shouting from the rooftops. There's obviously every type of person that had a horse in the race was getting their message out there. Now that we're nearly 2 years on, it's a little bit more established. What we've seen is there's still, and there was only a report out there last week saying that 69% of Irish businesses were still uncertain around their compliance obligations for the GDPR. So there's still learning that is needed out there. The regulators have started to fine, and again, that's a real catalyst. So I know that certain industries have been highlighted, and it's really driving change through those industries. So at the very start, yeah, ad tech and media sites, it was Google actually that was pushing for compliance, and Google's new terms of service required that any media sites, any retargeting that was done with full consent for cookies. So they were the real drivers for a lot of the media sites. And why now the fines are starting to hit some more traditional industries. I know recruitment has come under the spotlight in a big way. So I guess it's how they go about collecting data in terms of not every person that they approach wants to hear from the recruitment. They're probably happy in their jobs, and then it's up to them to unearth these people that would be looking for a change, but the manner that they go about that isn't always in line with the GDPR. So what we've seen is that fines and decisions have started to highlight certain areas and certain industries. So it's still at the forefront of our thinking. I think generally, socially, there's big pushes by either businesses that want to differentiate themselves by being the best in class, and at the same time there's big awareness sessions. So even going into the cinema, the Data Protection Commissioner in Ireland have obviously bought advertisement in cinemas. So you go in to watch a movie and you're hearing about your GDPR rights and risks. So they're really trying to raise the level of awareness across the EU, which I imagine can only be a good thing, so as people can start making more informed decisions. There was, at the time that it came out, there was fears that, okay, this is just like Y2K, there's a lot of noise now, and then give it a little bit of time or whatever, one day, and it's going to be fine, and we're going to get move on with our lives. But no, the GDPR, and I think general data protection regulations across the world will take root, and I think people have become more aware, especially when the levels of technology are just growing and the capabilities are just beyond what you could even dream of even 10 years ago. I think people are starting to take into consideration the impacts it might have on them. But again, we're still waiting for the big, I guess, enlightening moment where everybody really sees the value to it, because there's so many different levels of understanding.
Wow. Now, here in the U.S. in cybersecurity, we like to talk about KPIs, key performance indicators, metrics, blah, blah, blah. I mean, you could probably write a whole white paper just in all the terminology and technical jargon and all the acronyms associated with all this. Are there any KPIs or any quantitative measures, or even qualitative that matter, that a business can take to make sure that they are in compliance with these legislations? Or in other words, are there any industry benchmarks that a business can compare itself to as a baseline to make sure that they're within that legal threshold of being compliant?
Yeah. So in terms of your general KPIs, we do rely heavily on work with CISOs to understand the level of threat to the business. But I think hopefully you understand now at least that this goes beyond, and GDPR compliance goes beyond beyond just the protection of the data in the business. What we really look at is customer feedback. So if we have unsubscribes, are people, what's the rate of bounce on your unsubscribe list? How many complaints are you fielding on a monthly or quarterly basis? General satisfaction over how users interpret the brand. So we have worked with clients where we want to just understand how they're seen in light of data, especially when you're working with some companies in the med tech space where people are just generally more cautious around financial data and medical data, obviously for personal reasons. So really understanding if the client, if your users and your customers have confidence in you, but I suppose the key metrics would be the amount of complaints you're fielding, the amount of requests for you to erase all data or to no longer contact an individual. They'd be seen as the main ones, and then obviously you can balance yourself, count yourself lucky if there's no fines. There's no certification for GDPR, but people do look at ISO 27001 and as a kind of benchmark in terms of being compliant on a day-to-day basis, and especially if you're selling into larger clients and you're looking to be an approved vendor, that's a certification that's viewed quite well over here in Europe.
Okay. Now, here's an interesting question for you. Can a CIO or CISO actually act as a data privacy officer, or would it be better for the business to separate these two job titles and have two different functionalities for them?
Yes. Yeah, so in Europe specifically, if you're a company, so I think one of the main differentiations between the CCPA and the GDPR will be the requirement in the GDPR for certain businesses to have a data protection officer. And then there's a lot of time spent on describing the tasks of a data protection officer and their responsibilities. But the main one being that there's no conflict of interest between the role of the DPO, the data protection officer, and the other tasks that they perform for the company. So in general, there would be seen to be a conflict, a pretty major one, between the CISO and the DPO. When you are a business, the DPO needs to ensure more aspects are under his remit than your CISO, who wants to protect the integrity of the business, whereas the DPO needs to ensure that, okay, that the reporting to the data protection commissioners is done in a timely manner, that data subjects' rights are protected, that the overall compliance with the law. So there is that obligation placed on the DPO. In terms of if you're not mandated to have a DPO and you need an individual, maybe within the C-suite, maybe high enough up to affect change within the company, I don't see any reason why the CISO couldn't take on those type of initiatives in terms of data privacy, because obviously the CISO would have that good fundamental understanding of where the data within the company resides, and there'll be some probably some learning on their side, but the core knowledge of where the data resides and what's being done with it and basic controls around it would definitely be useful skills in terms of a DPO or a privacy officer. But specifically here in the EU, if you're mandated to have a DPO, the DPO doesn't, it's very unlikely that the CISO, no, I can pretty much say that the CISO would have conflicting interests with the DPO in terms of a mandated GDPR DPO. But for non-mandated, not that the CISO doesn't have lots of other work to be doing, but if they had the capacity within the role, it'd be a good fit for them to be able to oversee data privacy compliance.
Okay. Now, back to Ireland and Europe again. What is the mentality of data privacy in Europe? And let's maybe focus on Ireland just for simplicity. Are they I don't like to use the word ignorant. Are they maybe as indifferent as Americans are to their personal identifiable information records, or are they more proactive? Do they ask more questions as to where it's being stored, how it's being stored, whatsoever?
Yeah, I think it's a strange relationship we have with privacy. So people understand that it's important, especially when breaches come out in the news and the likes of that, people can get kind of up in arms. But at the same time, they're downloading apps and trying them and obviously just clicking the accept buttons without digging too deeply on the level of data that's passing between the app and themselves. I think we're quite quick to try out new technology and the likes of that, but we don't, when it comes to more sensitive areas. So again, digital privacy is one aspect, and it's one thing that's becoming more and more prevalent. So as I said before, the rise of new technologies, and as you were saying around facial recognition and the likes of that, we're entering a new space of unknown. And I think there's probably an element of conditioning that people just take it to expect that their phone is going to capture data around them, but without there being too much harm at the moment. I think traditionally across Ireland and Europe, the actual right to privacy, which was earned either from ruling nations or from old monarchies, when you're seen as the subject, you're a subject of the queen or whoever was in charge, and the right to privacy was really the right to autonomy and giving individuals and citizens rights. And I don't know if that's at the forefront of everybody's thinking, but there's a general attitude that, okay, you're an independent individual, you have this right to bodily integrity, and I think people describe privacy as the right to mental integrity, that you only give over data that you choose to disclose, you only give over your thoughts and opinions that you choose to disclose. And so I think there's a balancing line there. There's unknown around digital privacy, and people are happy to sign up and to test apps. The more fundamental underlying around privacy as a human right, I think it's well respected if people are still not as informed around what it really means. And it's kind of one of those things that until it's taken away, people don't really value it. So when people are the subject of a data breach or their identity's been stolen in some sort of banking fraud, then they see the value and the importance of it. But in general, they're happy enough to sign up, and we're still quite early adopters when it comes to new apps and new things to try out. I hope that answers your question. It's quite a loaded question, I guess, because I guess you could ask 10 different people what they think or what they perceive to be privacy, and you'd probably get 10 very different answers.
Yeah, I mean, you can ask 10 different people here off the street here in Chicago, you'll come up with 20 different answers from 10 different people. But talking about mobile apps, this is going to sound kind of contradictory. As much as I am in cybersecurity, and I do love writing and, podcasting and all that about it, I also hate technology. You'll see I have only maybe one or two mobile apps on my smartphone. I despise mobile apps. I think we are so inundated now with digital. It's what happened, when I was growing up in the 1980s, what, you know, smartphones, mobile apps, they're not even heard of it. In fact, I don't think even the internet was even, I mean, it was conceived of with the AppRNet, obviously, but it wasn't like, you know, what we're seeing now. And one thing I did want to point out, Tom, is that, you know, with the, in terms of mobile apps, there is a big security issue there. I know with Apple, their iTunes store, I know that they have really pretty strict safeguards with, you know, software developers uploading, you know, mobile apps to their store, and I think with regards to the data privacy as well. I know Google's a lot more lax, and I think there have been a lot of stories about, you know, where there are a lot of, like, rogue mobile apps which haven't been sandboxed and tested first. They haven't uploaded, and people's, you know, their data, you know, their PIs have been stolen and so forth. So are there similar stories of that in Ireland also, where Google's getting more lax with their mobile app security than Apple perhaps? Or
yeah, I think Apple's a very good example of a company that's traditionally tried to use privacy and security as a real selling point. So to give customers and their users confidence, I guess, that they're more leaning that way than perhaps typically Google. So we get, like, again, you're looking in our houses, the appliances that we have, the phones, the apps, they're very similar to the US. Do you know what I mean? That they, like, once you've got an app, I think I mentioned at the very start, you just need a set of servers and you can be launched globally quite easy through the different app store or the Play Store. I know we have clients who are launching apps, and the different levels of precaution in terms of documentation and reports that's needed to be accepted to certain platforms over others is quite different, and they come in stark contrast. But yeah, I think it's just the way of the world. Some certain people want to embrace it and want to leverage it, while others want to, I guess, condition people to make them feel like, oh, data doesn't carry any significance. So I think there's probably forces at play.
Yeah, that now segues now into my actually a totally different question. The Internet of Things, that is a whole new mushroom of a new topic. And here in the U.S., I think people have just started to embrace it. You know, we're seeing primitive forms of that, you know, Siri and Cortana for the, you know, iOS and Android platforms. But it fundamentally, to me, I don't like IoT. I think it's a very scary proposition. And especially from a security standpoint, you know, that just increases, you know, by 100 times the attack surface for the cyber attacker, because all these connections are not encrypted. And I think a lot of them still use RFID, you know, wireless connections. In Ireland and Europe, what is the perception of IoT, and what will that bring in terms of implications of data privacy? I know it's a huge nebulous question, but if you can just give us, like, maybe what your thoughts are on that and what you think.
Yeah, I think IoT, there's been all the regulators in Europe are aware of it, and certain guidance has been published, because there is potential risk there. You've got so many potential vulnerabilities and single points of failure. In terms, like, you look at both on the corporate level and the personal level, so having your smart homes where everything is just linked up together can have quite noticeable impacts on individuals, and there should be really higher standards to in terms of security and the protection of those ecosystems. I would say that 2020 will see a lot more of regulation in terms of prescriptive regulation that IoT and providers will need to follow. But at the moment, yeah, it's more theoretical in terms of, okay, the potential the potential impacts that this could happen, that this could have. Again, purely from a data privacy piece, there's certain amounts, but I really think this is going to be fresh regulation that's going to come in terms of IoT. Now, I know the US is usually slower in regulating regulating industries and the likes of that, but in Europe, I think there will be regulation, or there's already draft regulation, which will be coming in this coming decade.
Wow. Okay. Now, do you have any customer success stories you can share with us? And another question I want to ask you is, I kind of maybe brought this up before. You know, there are other data privacy consultants out there. Why should I come to you and say, hey, Tom, can you help me come to compliance versus going to the other, you know, compliance consultancy firm down the street?
Yeah, I suppose what we've really built the company on is the ability to meet clients' needs. And I know that can be, that's said by every single company. But what we have specifically is experience both in the compliance field through myself. We've got cybersecurity professionals because it's not the primary part of our business, but it is such a core compliance piece within any of the regulations that at the very base level, your networks and your business should be secure. And also, we have a strong legal view. So we've seen a lot of the firms that are dealing with data privacy at the moment, they're either traditionally information security firms, they're traditionally law firms, whereas we haven't seen, and I haven't seen too many competitors that are able to provide this operational compliance expertise laden in with your legal requirements and your legal interpretations of how to comply, and then a good information security program to kind of build this all up if we're not dealing directly with the CISO. So they're kind of the three main areas that we've built our offering on, and it's quite unique in that we're bringing people from different sectors to approach this challenge that is data privacy. Because yeah, as I said, lawyers that are coming in that have never worked on the ground and worked operationally, there's a gap in that knowledge. Obviously, I purely came from a compliance background, so there was a gap in my knowledge. And as I built out the company, I tried to fill those gaps with professionals. On top of that, our support and clients have really, any of our feedback and reviews that you can read online on Clutch for Apex Privacy, really talk about our level of customer support. So when we sign on as the DPO, we schedule bi-weekly meetings with the internal team to ensure that we're kept up to date with what's happening and that they really see us as a team member, and it's not just a formality that we have a DPO. No, the DPO is involved with the teams probably more than any other stakeholder, because any project that's being sprung up within a company needs to involve the DPO just to understand, okay, at the very base level, is it personal data that is being used? And then from there, we can guide if it is personal data. Nearly every project in some way, bar a pure tech piece, will involve the processing of data. So, yeah, we become a member of the team, and we really look to plug the gaps in skills for all of our clients.
Wow. Okay. Now, the time has really gone here. We're not coming into the last, 15 minutes of our show here. We'll start to wrap up here. Let's just talk about the cybersecurity threat landscape in general. Most importantly, how do you see – I keep asking about the cybersecurity landscape, but what do you see about the regulatory landscape? How is that going to change, and how is that going to evolve? Not just this year, but in the coming decades. This is going to be a new gold mine for many new laws to be passed and so forth. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think we've seen that while there's plenty of detractors from the GDPR, there's many recognise that it's a step in the right direction. And what's been noticeable has that this law took 20 years to come into force, well, come into effect, but the rate of technological change, it's hard to keep up with. And I think companies and, well, states and legislatures are coming to see that there needs to be controls in place because these potentially are having detrimental effects on individuals. So in terms of the regulatory landscape, we've already seen California, I know Australia, have updated their own privacy laws, the same with Canada. In the States particularly, I do see some sort of national regulation as opposed to state by state, and that'll probably be pushed by big business because, as I said, complying with a different law within each state for the processing of data would, at some stage, it might not be possible. And the overheads in terms of having to comply with multiple laws, even if they're all kind of singing from the same hymn sheet, it will become an issue. So I think they'll probably follow the European route in terms of one law to cover all. Globally, so the GDPR also input this clause around an equivalency decision. So an equivalency decision is recognition by the European Commission that any particular country has an equivalent level of protection to the data, to personal data as per the GDPR. So in order to obtain this equivalency decision, these countries need to enact laws which are equivalent to the GDPR, obviously. And we've seen this through Canada or through Brazil. Brazil have brought in or are due to bring in their own version of the GDPR. And I think a lot of these up-and-coming nations, especially in the tech space, will be looking to get that equivalency decision from the EU, which just means that the transfer of data to and from that country can happen in a much more seamless manner. So I think that'll be a big driver, especially if there's other big regulations that apply this equivalency approach, then we could see some sort of harmonization globally of regulations that kind of raise the bar in terms of protection to the individuals. Because at the end of the day, these regulations are there to recognize the right to individuals to have control over their data and how their data is being used.
Okay. Well, finally, last question for the show here. I'm going to save the gold, the biggie for the end here. What do you recommend for businesses, you know, small to medium-sized and large-scale enterprises to approach compliance and data privacy regulation? What can they do to avoid these heavy penalties and fines and so forth? And what can you tell them?
Yeah, I think, like, at the very basic level, just you need to understand how your data or how your company gathers data. What mechanisms are out there for data to feed into the company? Once it's in there, what do you do with data? Would you expect, so there's always that expectations test. If you were the individual involved, would you expect your data to be used in this manner? And then obviously you're going to lay on top, right, what's the basic control? So if you can't afford cybersecurity, officer or like softwares and the likes of that, you need to ensure that the data it's protected on a level that you would expect. So whether that's just good passwords and good either physical or cloud storage and have controls fit for purpose. But I suppose that the basics of it is just understanding the data, understanding what you're doing with it, and where possible, document everything. So I've worked with a lot of clients that have good practices in place, but there's nothing documented. So if you have a regulator knocking on your door and you don't have timestamped policies and procedures and training that you can evidence, then it's as if it doesn't exist. So I think, yes, start with the basics. Just try and map out what data you've got and then see what, make judgments in terms of what's required to protect that and to meet the expectations of the people's data that you have.
Okay. Well, Tom, we thank you very much for your time this, I guess, Saturday afternoon here in the U.S., I think Sunday evening in Ireland. Thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it, and you've really shed a lot of insight to our subscribers here as to what GDPR and CCPR and overall what regulatory compliance really means to businesses. Thanks for your time, and we look forward to having you again on a future podcast.
Cheers, Robbie. Thanks very much for having me.
Thank you. Take care. Have a good weekend.
Take care. Bye-bye.